Welcome to Take Note on WPSU. I'm Ann Danahy. Today we're talking with two people with a passion for old blues and jazz recordings. Robert Crumb is best known as an underground cartoonist whose work, including Fritz the Cat and Mr. Natural, remains controversial. But Crumb is also a collector and celebrator of old blues records. Jerry Zoltan is a professor of communications arts and sciences and integrative arts at Penn State Altoona. His work includes the book, Great God Almighty, The Dixie Hummingbirds, Celebrating the Rise of Soul Gospel Music. Robert Crumb and Jerry Zoltan, welcome to Take Note.
Thank you.
Nice to be here.
You're both self-described jazz and blues fanatics, but Robert Crumb, your interest is actually more specific than that, if I'm correct. It's collecting 78s, so a specific type of record. Why is that more appealing to you? Why are you drawn to that as opposed to 33s or 45s?
Well, I don't like LPs, 33s, because somebody else's program. This, what is it, 6 tracks per side? And they're all in the same order. Every time you listen to it, if you don't want to listen to their order that they've put them in, then you have to get up and find the track you want to listen to, which is very tedious. And a 78 is the single, and you have to change it every 3 minutes. You decide every 3 minutes what you want to listen to. Keeps you actively involved in the music. Plus, they're just very attractive objects. And a lot of the records of that period, you could only find on 78. Some has not been reissued. And also, if you have the right equipment, the presence of the music on the 78 is stronger than any reproduction on any other form, LP, tape, CD, anything. The presence, if you have a good condition 78 and you have good equipment, the presence is going to be stronger of the music. More mystical experience listening to a 1929 blues record in good condition on the original 78 than it is on any other medium.
Jerry, do you agree with that the sound quality has something different and special?
Oh, I concur with everything Robert says, but I would also add, for me, it's this 6 degrees of separation thing. The records are almost emblematic. They're as close as I can get to the people who made the records, and I love holding the record and thinking, who bought this?
Absolutely. I totally agree. All that's definitely a part of it.
So, yeah, it's all there.
It's all there. And then it must be said, there's something of the collecting addiction involved also. You know, I could be collecting stamps or, you know.
Picasso's?
No. That's a little bit out of my range.
I was just thinking because you could collect 33s too or 45, so it wouldn't have to be that. And you could have a mix of different types of songs that you would like. You can control that in different ways too. So there are other ways of getting those things, but it sounds like they're saying there's something specific to the sound and the aura of what comes with it.
Well, I will confess, and Robert and I both do this, there's a lot of surface noise. You know, we hear right through it. You know, it's part of the... Although there's nothing like a pristine, almost unplayed copy. Right. But we'll tolerate whatever we have to tolerate to get at music that you simply will never hear in any other form.
Yeah.
And it's not just jazz and blues. I mean, it's Back Hills, what they called hillbilly music. It's gospel. It's music that came from people who were really salt of the earth. And they weren't making music to make money or become famous. They were making music because that's how they survived. So it's got a soul and a heart to it that you just can't find.
It's a very hard thing to describe, actually, when you get down to talking about that stuff, the authenticity factor and all that. That's very hard to put in words what the difference is in the music that comes from that, you know, old-time people's music world. That's really hard to describe. There once this guy from the comics world that I, you know, live in, who had no idea of about old music, and he was at my house. He said, "What? Play me one of these old blues records you have. I never heard any of that stuff. I just want to see what it is you like about it." So I put on this record that to me is like one of the most profound listening experiences, "Down the Dirt Road Blues" by Charlie Patton. I have a nice clean copy. I put it on. It took me away again, as it always does, you know, into this other realm. And it ends, and I take it off, And the guy looks at me and he says, "So what is it about that that you like?"
It didn't have the same effect on him.
But the point is that I can't describe that experience. I don't know. You know, it either gets to you or it doesn't, you know. And some people, I don't know, it's a neurological thing, you know. So it's funny, like Zoltan here and several other guys I know, they're into this old music. And one female that I know, you go to their house, their room where they keep theirs, it's very similar looking as this old pictures on the wall and old toys and funky little items from the 30s and 40s, you know, funny little figurines and stuff. Everybody that I know that collects those kind of records has that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And boxes of them?
Well.
Some have more than others, but, you know, it's a sensibility that those kind of people have in common. I don't know.
It's an aesthetic.
It's a neurological thing. I don't know.
So you've done WPSU radio shows together in the past to talk about this music from the 1920s and 30s. And Jerry, I read that you said you hope the blues show introduces people to this music.
Right.
What do you think will draw new audiences to it?
Well, to clarify, we only once did this. And the goal is to keep this legacy alive. And to be quite honest, I thought it would be great to do it with someone like Robert Crumb, because he's got a lot of fans who will say, "Oh, I want the artwork. I want the cover. Look at how cool that is." It's our way of tricking them into listening to music that they may not have otherwise listened to.
Yeah. I mean, it's true that, you know, in some of my artwork that I've done around this music has created a sort of romantic aura that has attracted younger people to listen to the music. I've been told that, you know, that they were attracted first by my artwork about the music and then were compelled or curious to listen to the music based on that, and then were drawn into the music, which is nice.
Yeah. What do you think this genre of music offers that other genres don't? And I don't know if this is one of those questions you were saying it can be hard to put into words.
It's very hard. You could write a book about this. I mean, the evolution of popular music. I've yet to see anybody write a really cogent book on that subject. I mean, people have talked around it, but what happened to music? I mean, you go back 125 years, 150 years. The only way you could hear music was live, unless you had a cranking music box, you know. But it was all live music, and then recording came along. At first, it was very crude and all that. If people wanted to entertain themselves or have a dance, you had to bring in some local musicians. So that kept music really deeply, intimately involved with the people's lives in a way that was very direct, very simple. The local farmers also played fiddles and banjos or accordions or whatever, all over the world was that way. And things have changed so much. My personal opinion, which is, again, quote, controversial, is that modern pop music, that people are just lost. I listen to it and I hear it in their cars or in even like live performances with their sound equipment and all that, and it's just lost. They're lost from this, lost touch with the roots of their own ancestors, their own world that brought them into existence. I don't know. It's a hard thing to explain again.
They've cooked out the nutrition.
did it become too commercialized and too processed?
Processed is a good word.
Yeah, processed is good. That's good. It's processed music, it is. But then the thing is, you get several generations of processed music, and if that's all that young people have heard is processed music, then they're creating they might even think they're rebelling and going, you know, creating something of their own, like punk or something, which is like a result of processed music. It's so disconnected from the origins of, you know, music in the old days was something that people did, especially like dance music, for a happy moment, for a good time, you know, they're tired from work and all that. Let's have a good time. Let's play some music, you know. It was for that. It was for comfort and pleasure and good time. And now music is like used for like punk music and all that, or some rap, most rap, for rebellion. It's full of anger and rebellion. They want to be rebellious against the their parents or the middle class or the society. And so they deliberately make it angry and ugly. Like, punk is just deliberately ugly.
This might be a good time to, like, let's listen to one of the songs that I got from your show when you did this. And I think it was 2004, I think. If I,
a little,
that song?
2003, maybe.
Okay.
Jesus, that long ago.
Oh, quite a while ago. And this song is called Walk Right In.
Walk right in, let right down. And baby, let your mind roll on. Hey, walk right in. They don't know why, but daddy, you been saying too long. Not everybody talking about that evil way of walking. Neither want to do your mind. Hey, walk right in. Let's lie down. And daddy, let your mind roll on. Hey, walk right in. Right down, and baby, let your mind roll on. Hey, walk right in, here a little while. But daddy, you need to stay too long. Cause everybody talking about that new way to walk. You wanna lose your mind. Hey, walk right in, right down, and daddy, let your mind roll on.
Whose record was that, Jerry? Was that your record?
That actually, most of the records on the collection are from Robert, but that one was mine, which I found locally in a little yard sale situation.
Unbelievable.
You know? Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Because it's incredibly rare.
You still find records like that at yard sales. Wow.
What can you tell us about that song, that record?
Well, you know, most people know it because it was a hit, a cover version of it.
No,
it was a hit in the 60s.
Most people don't know it. So the 60s was 50 years ago, dude. Come
on. I'm a funny
They weren't even
man.
Born yet.
Anyway.
That's long forgotten. The
all right, point taken. But if you've heard of it, you probably know it from the 60s folk rock group called the Rooftop Singers. And I remember when that record came out, I disliked it. I didn't know the original.
You disliked it?
Yeah, when it came out, it was, you know, it sounded like it was meant to, you know, walk right in, set right down, let your hair hang down. It. I thought it was like a hippie
Baby,
thing.
Let your
you know?
Mind go.
But then I learned the truth of the matter. Gus Cannon, the guy who came up with that, was a shill for medicine shows. And, you know, concoctions, water with a little kerosene, you know, and he would hire out to make music that would draw people to the medicine show tent. So walk right in, set right down. Everybody's talking about a new way of walking, you know, and it's a whole other dimension. And you get that on hearing the original Gus Cannon. Robert knows some great stories about what happened to Mr. Cannon.
Well, yeah, he made that record in 1929 or 30, and then, you know, when what's the name of that group? The Rooftop Singers?
The Rooftop Singers.
When they made it, and it was a hit, so they made a lot of money off it. It was RCA Victor. Then somebody was hip enough to tell RCA Victor that the original guy who wrote that tune was probably still alive and had recorded it for the Victor Company, which, you know, RCA took over in 1930 or something. And that they thought he should get some royalties for it. So they actually found Gus Cannon. He was working in a tire factory in some southern city. They found him, and they wrote to him and said, yeah, we owe you some royalties for this song that you created. And he was just completely, you know, dumbfounded. And then he started, like, telling everybody he was going to get this big royalty check. And apparently he got the check. And he went to the bank, or I'm not sure the story exactly, but he got the money, and then he was walking home, and he got beaten and robbed.
And robbed, oh.
Beaten badly.
If you're just joining us, this is Take Note on WPSU. I'm Ann Danahy, and today we're talking with underground cartoonist Robert Crumb and music historian Jerry Zoltan. And Jerry, were you going to say something else about that song?
Only that he was beaten twice, once by the record company and then by by his buddies in the neighborhood. Who knows?
Oh, jeez.
But, you listen to that record and you know this story, and it's got a substance and depth and cachet that, my God, it's enormous. It's profound.
How did you both become interested in this old-time music? I think, Jerry, I read that you picked it up listening to the radio. Is that right?
Sure. Although Robert and I have compared notes, and we did a similar thing. We both, as young kids, had radios by our bedsides, and late at night you could tweak the dial if you were very good at it. I could pick up, living in Pittsburgh, stations coming from as far away as New Orleans, Chicago, and I was hearing music that sounded like it was coming from outer space. I had no idea who it was. I just knew I loved it. I think you did the same thing, did you not?
I guess that you had to have some kind of musical curiosity to do that, to just get beyond the level of like pop teenage music that, you know, of your time. And yeah, I would do that, twist the dial. And I remember on Sunday morning, I would find some kind of local black church music that was really real. It was really authentic, you know. And later when I found 78s, I found 78s that sounded like that. You know, this kind of funky local black church music.
I think Robert once said that he felt rhythmically deprived and didn't realize it until he found a record.
Syncopation deprived.
Syncopation deprived.
When I first discovered dance band records from the 20s that had that syncopation in it, I realized my whole life that's what I'd been looking for. And you could hear little fragments, little shreds of it remaining in like Jerry Lee Lewis and stuff in early rock and roll, this syncopation, like ragtime embodied it, you know, completely. And I remember I found this record when I was 16 of this dance band, Charlie Fry's Million Dollar Pier Orchestra from Atlantic City, playing a tune called Happy Days in Loneliness. I never heard of it. I just picked it up out of curiosity. I was 16. And I put it on, an introduction of the song contain this syncopation, like that, and oh my God, that's it. That's what I've been looking for. That's what I've been missing all these years through all this dreary 50s pop of Rosemary Clooney and Perry Como that my mother liked, and then, you know, Pat Boone and all that crap, and then it was a little bit of an early rock and roll and rockabilly stuff and all that.
Yep.
How did you two find each other and that you had this in common?
Well,
I don't remember.
I do. we've known each other for a staggering over
decades.
30 years. I remember what happened. We had a mutual friend, a guy named George Chastain, who was a talented comic artist. And I think George and Robert were working with the same agent, and the agent knew that George had records and asked if George might like an introduction to Robert. And George also offered my name. And then one day out of the blue, I get a letter in the mail in this hand-printed writing that I immediately recognized. And it was Robert asking me if I would be willing to trade old records for original artwork.
No fool was I.
Well, I first did that with Chastain. Chastain had fabulous records that he found around here. He found them in Western Pennsylvania.
Yeah, George lived here in State College.
Okay.
I got fabulous records from him for artwork.
Yeah, I know people who go to just to go to yard sales or old record shops. There aren't as many of those around anymore, of course, as there had been. But that was just a way to discover new things.
Yeah, sure.
For me, yard sales, I can't find things in record stores. I find them in yard sales and flea markets. And Central Pennsylvania is rich.
Driving around with him, he'll stop at every yard sale. If there's a yard sale, he will slam on the brakes to make a U-turn. Let's stop there. I remember once we stopped at this yard sale, and I just looked. I said, there's not going to be anything there. Look, it's just like a bunch of crappy plastic toys and some baby clothes and some junky looking. And he said, no, we got to look. So I'm walking around, and there's nothing. And then I see a box that has like three or four LPs in this box that were of completely no interest. And I just go over there in a desultory way and shuffle through them, and wait, there's a 78 stuck in there. I pull it out, and oh my God, it's like a rare 1928 hillbilly record.
Absolutely.
Stuck in there. So yeah, you got to stop.
Oh my gosh. So, and you're living in France. You have lived there for quite a while.
Yeah, I have, yeah.
Do you find people there who share your love of music too?
Yeah, sure. Guy right across the street from me. Collects old 78s of old-time jazz and stuff.
Yeah. I think in Paris and the French in general are absolutely, I mean, how many African-American musicians move to Paris and France to escape from the kind of, you know, prejudices they dealt
with? Jim Crow.
There's lots of music to be found. I love going to the flea markets around Sauve in France.
When I first lived there, there was lots of 78s around to pick up. And I got deeply into old-time French dance music, proletarian French dance music called musette. It's all accordion-led. And it was all for the taking. No one else was interested in it.
Not appreciated.
No, forgotten, buried.
So I have to ask this question. The name of the, when you did the show together and we've talked about it, was Chimp in the Blues. And I just wondered if you ever got feedback from someone who might find that kind of offensive, because you're talking about a largely music by African Americans, and then you're two white guys talking about it, and I just wondered if you ever got that from
me. Gosh, no.
No?
Not yet. People are getting so touchy, it could happen.
Well, we did clarify. Robert added a little thing in the corner that says, you know, chimping, like chimpanzees chittering, you know, nitpicking about music.
Chattering. I thought you were going to ask, would like other collectors find that offensive, a derogatory, you know, way of looking at at collectors? You know?
Oh, is there that feeling among collectors of elitism?
No, but, you know, some don't have a sense of humor about themselves, and they don't like kidding about the neurosis and the absurdity of being a collector. You know, being a collector is not exactly a heroic thing to be doing.
Lots of people have collections. It just depends on what it is. So one other question I wanted to ask you, Robert, and I'd be remiss if I didn't talk a little bit about your drawings too. First of all, I think I read that you're not really drawing as much. Is that true?
Yeah, I draw less than I used to.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of quit drawing comics. Just do illustrations, covers, commissions, paintings, stuff like that.
And you still have some exhibits, too?
Yeah. Yeah, and my work still gets, you know, the old stuff still gets shown around and all that.
So. Right. And obviously, it's not just now, but even when some of it was first coming out, that people could be offended by it, some of the way that women were portrayed. I wondered if, when you're looking at it now, some of this was 30, 40 years ago, do you look at it differently?
Sure. Yeah, I've changed a lot since then. You know, the hormones have gone way down, for one thing, you know, so I was so driven by my libido and id in those days, you know, so now that's gone down. So I look at, wow, what a crazy young guy I was, you know, crazy. And yeah, it's, you know, when you speak honestly, to that level of honesty about yourself, you're going to offend somebody. Can't be helped. People are going to be offended. Sorry. If you're offended, don't look at it. You don't have to look at it.
I'll get Jerry's perspective on that, because you're a college professor, so you work with young people. And how do you see that, if young people see something like that and they find it offensive?
I always thought that Robert was a social satirist, and that the ugliest images were his ability to dredge up the darkness that probably lurks in all of our minds, and his brilliance ability to shine. So expose it for its ugliness, if you want to call it that. You know, I thought it was a brilliant wake-up call. You know,
I just had to do it.
Robert has no filter that I've ever been able to discern.
That's right.
It just comes out, but it's lines on paper.
I think I read a quote, and it was, you said this was something your wife says, that you're always a contrarian and that you were born weird. I always felt there was something odd and off about my nervous system. If everybody's walking forward, I want to walk backwards.
Mm-hmm.
Do you still feel that way, even as a septuagenarian?
Yeah, afraid so. They're all walking that way. I'm going the other way. I often feel that way.
It's a myth about age and wisdom.
Well,
sometimes I feel like I ride here from Mars. I don't know. What the hell? What are these people what are they doing, these human beings? And but at the same time, when I was young, I had like strong sexual desire for some of their women. But I still felt so alienated from human beings and the way they behave. What the hell are they doing? Why do they like that? Why do they build these ugly buildings? What are they doing? Why do they kick that ball around in that field? What the hell? I just then couldn't relate to it.
We're almost out of time, so we'll listen to one more song. And this one is Last Kind Word.
Ooh, masterpiece.
If I die, if I die in the German war, I want to send my body, send it to my mother-in-law. If I get killed, if I get killed, please don't bury my soul. I can't just leave me out, let the brother see me go. When you see me coming, look across the Richmond field. And if I don't bring you flowers, I'll bring you golden news.
What are your thoughts on that?
One of the greatest records ever made.
It's just a powerful, extremely rare recording that has seemed of late to have captured imaginations. I mean, the New York Times put it on the cover of the New York Times magazine a year or so ago. It's a song that profoundly impacts both of us. There's an emotional gravitas to it that I can't get from any other thing I've ever heard.
It's a very unique record. And when they were doing that article, somebody that was working on it, some woman, wrote to me and asked me, like, if I could, she wanted to interview me about that record. How did that record change American music or something like that question? And I said, change America? Had no effect whatsoever on American music. It was heard by so few people, and these two women were performing locally somewhere in Texas. And
L.V. Thomas and Gishy Wiley.
Yeah.
Yeah, there is something so just intense and drawing about it.
Oh, yeah, it's deep. It's deep.
It is. It is. Robert Crum and Jerry Zoltan, thank you both for joining us.
My pleasure.
We've been talking with underground cartoonist Robert Crum and music historian and Penn State Altoona professor Jerry Zoltan. To hear this and other episodes of Take Note, go to wpsu.org/takenote. I'm Ann Danahy, WPSU.